Consider Arthur Schnabel, who could play impeccably in front of thousands in a live performance, but he would get nervous in the recording studio. And this seems backwards to us because in the recording studio, you can have endless takes. But Schnabel, he grew up when recording was being invented, so he couldn't embrace the permanence of the recorded performance. He lived in the moment, and after years of playing in front of people, he knew exactly how to put himself in the right frame of mind to go on the stage. But without an audience, he couldn't recreate that mindset. Welcome back to Accelerando. I'm Paula Tuttle, and today I'm talking about the legacy of music. Arthur Schnabel recorded all 32 Beethoven sonatas, and the recording is still being printed, manufactured, and sold. It's never gone out of print. And his interpretation of Beethoven and Schubert are legendary. It's his touchstone. His recordings are great, but not as great as his live performances, so said. So in the case of Arthur Schnabel, his recordings are more of a symbol of a pillar that dominates the art of piano playing. Musicians like to talk about their pedagogical lineage, the way other people trace their genealogy. I know one pianist that referred to her musical grandchildren, meaning students of her students. Pianists are proud to proclaim that their lineage goes back to Beethoven, and Arthur Schnabel is an important link in this music lineage. He's just two generations away from Beethoven. He studied with Leschetizky, who studied with Czerny, and Czerny was Beethoven's assistant, close friend, and student. Two of Schnabel's greatest students were Leonard Shore and Leon Fleischer. Leonard Shore was Schnabel's teaching assistant, the only teaching assistant he ever had. And Leon Fleischer, some argue, is the greatest pianist of the 20th century. Leon Fleischer's career was interrupted when he was afflicted with a neurological disease called focal dystonia, which made his right hand partially paralyzed. So going forward, he was only able to play concertos for the left hand, but he also conducted and taught. His hand was later restored many decades later, and he released a wonderful recording called Two Hands, and the profits go to research for focal dystonia. At the New England Conservatory, I got to study with Leonard Shore because he taught a chamber music masterclass every week. And his stories about Schnabel were plentiful. Mr. Shore loved to teach Beethoven string quartets. It was part of his own musical study with Schnabel. He studied all 18 quartets for the rhythm, the phrasing, and the structure of the music. As if 32 piano sonatas and 5 piano concertos weren't enough, pianists used to study the quartets. I can only surmise, but I imagine the 4-part nature of the compositions offered a clearer way to analyze the master's approach to harmony and composition. But when you're talking about some of the greatest music written, yes, 50 is better than 32. In his 70s, Leonard still played concertos with orchestra. I got to turn pages for him when he played Brahms 1 with the Boston Philharmonic and Benjamin Zander. And at 74 years old, Leonard Shore could play Brahms 1 like no one else. He was still a virtuoso, he had the strength of a bull, and his musical insight into Brahms was unparalleled. It's a performance I will never forget. Mr. Shore gave me explicit instructions how to turn the pages. I had to reach underneath the music, grab it by the lower corner, and turn it at exactly the right time. No standing up, no drawing any attention to myself. My hair had to be tied back. I was to dress in a particular way. I don't stand up with the orchestra, but I was to trail off after Mr. Shore when he leaves the stage. So there I was with the best seat in the house. On my right side was a 9-foot grand piano that was built to Mr. Shore's specifications, and on my left was the Boston Philharmonic. That very same year, the NEC Orchestra performed an all-Beethoven concert with Leonard Shore playing the Emperor Concerto and Leon Fleischer conducting. Leon Fleischer seemed to spend 2 weeks of rehearsals telling the orchestra how to play 16th notes correctly or how to execute other rhythms properly. And this was something that Leonard Shore talked about incessantly in his master classes. I think back to those days when Leon Fleischer was telling us about how to play the basic code of music and how it was probably the exact way Schnabel talked to him, and it's possibly the way Beethoven taught Czerny. There's a Wikipedia page that's dedicated to this music lineage. If you search for List of Music Students by Teacher, you'll find it. Since anyone can edit a wiki page, hundreds of musicians have added their names and the names of their teachers and their teachers' teachers because a lot of people think it's worth celebrating. So check it out. For all you know, you might have a path back to more than one of the greatest composers of all time. It's fun. Of all the reasons to teach your instrument, you think it's a way to make money, it's also a good career, but most of us do it because it's the way things are done in the music world. All the greatest musicians eventually recognize the importance of music education, and they advocate for better humanities in our schools. Lately, there is a movement to add A to STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. Adding an A for art will make it STEAM, and the world is starting to recognize something's missing in our schools. You know, I get it. STEM and SATs, they focus on memorization, which is a good skill, but the knowledge is only temporary. And math teaches us to solve problems by a prescribed formula, but let's face it, somebody has to create the formula. I've heard that if you ask a bunch of five-year-olds if they think of them as artists or creative people, most of them will raise their hands. And then you ask a group of 18-year-olds the same question, and the number is half. And the number just keeps going down the older people get. Ken Robinson told a great story in his famous TED Talk about creativity. A teacher saw a very young child drawing with great enthusiasm at her desk. The teacher goes to see what she's drawing. "What are you drawing?" she asks her. The little girl says, "I'm drawing a picture of God." And the teacher says, "Sweetie, no one knows what God looks like." And the girl replies, "Well, they will in a minute." Maybe schools don't teach creativity and art because it seems innate at a young age, and they're just becoming aware that it seems to atrophy over time. But schools need to teach creativity, and they can do it in these classical ways, art and music. If your kids aren't getting these options, you either need to talk to your school or just get lessons outside of school. If your kids get an extracurricular art and music education, they will go further, and they will probably do better in science and math. There's lots of evidence there. So finally this, consider, Albert Einstein played the violin. It's true. A famous physicist played all his life, and that could be reason enough to start your five-year-old on an instrument. So here's the gist of my rant today. You should give your kids music lessons. It could be violin, piano, trumpet, whatever. You're not only nourishing their creativity, you're developing critical thinking, and you're helping them overcome laziness, and you're making them think for themselves. And you really can't get enough of that in a world that strives to interrupt our lives constantly with those phones and those iPads and the internet. Music is the answer. And one last thought. The trade of musician, performer, and teacher are things that cannot be done by a computer or AI, something that cannot be outsourced to non-humans. Creativity is the one sector that will remain a human task. And sharing the art of performing is a very important calling in that context. So this week was really a tribute to music teachers. So maybe you want to take a minute to thank your music teacher, or your art teacher, or the mom who made you practice. Because art makes all the difference. Creativity is necessary in finding solutions. So thanks for listening. I hope you'll share this with your friends and check the show notes at accelerandocast.com. See you next time.